The following talk was given by Taisho Sarah Sands. Taisho is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order.
I could hear the wailing almost immediately when I got out of my car. I was living up at the monastery, and I parked in the parking lot. And what I heard was a person wailing from very deep in. They were in a lot of pain. And along with that wailing, there was a pounding of his head upon the picnic table. We have these picnic tables in a grassy area near the cars. And I just went running. I had no idea what was going on. I had never seen this person. We were doing Hosan, which is our days off. And I went there. By the time I got there, I was out of breath from running. It's just like, what, like, are you okay? You know, what's wrong? What's going on? And this is October, and they have just like a tank top. They don't have any shoes. They have shorts. They look disheveled. And, you know, there's some interaction. I call someone else. I want to make sure to get a blanket for him, and we got some warmer clothing, some shoes. We got something warm to drink. And, you know, at a certain point, I said, you know, where did you sleep? Where did you sleep? Where did you come from? Something along that line. And he motioned to the forest, so clearly he had been slept in the forest above the monastery. And he was disoriented. He didn't know where he was. And he just said, where am I? Where am I? And I said, you're at a monastery. It's safe. You're like, okay, because he seemed a little agitated. And I cupped my hands around his. And I just looked at him very intently. I said, where do you live? Where do you live? And he's looking very straight back, like unblinkingly straight back at me. And he says, in your hands. And I was pulled up short. I was pulled up short. And I just closed my eyes. I said, absolutely. You're absolutely right. It was a moment where if he would know the context, I would have said, thank you for your teaching. In all seriousness. You know, the Dharma comes, if you're open to it, it comes everywhere. Not just from teachers, not just from formal students. The world is the Dharma. And what I saw him pointing to was I was asking where he lives, and he was telling me where he's alive. Those are two very different things. From my world, he seemed out of place, and I wanted to place him. Where do you live? Where's the address? Where do we get you to? And he's just like pointing me to the moment. Right here, right now, us two. And we just, that's what we worked with. Anyway, good morning. And I'll get back to the context of that story, but I wanted to start there. So as you know, I'm Taisho. I'm a senior student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. Hojin Sensei was so generous to invite me down, and you've been so generous to invite me in as well. And I'm so excited to be here. I don't get down here enough, and whenever I do, it's such a treat. What I had prepared for today, and I'm going to go a little off script, but hopefully not off rails. we'll see. never now, which would be exciting. Anyway, well, I wanted to talk about letting go, you know, and I've been working with reading the Fukien Zazenji by A.A. Dogen, who's like a very important teacher within our lineage. Almost, you know, all of Japanese Zen and comes through him and from him, and certainly unbroken lineage from him to us. And Dogen is great. He's rich, and we could unpack him, and we could spend a lot of time unpacking him. But ultimately, so in the Fukien Zazenji is, he went to Japan to learn Zen, to get what he thought would be the authentic teachings. Yes, he wasn't finding them in Japan. So he went to China, and when he came back, this is like the first thing he wrote down. The first thing he wrote down is really about Zazen. You know, if you think about it, of all the things he could write, it's like, no, we begin here. This is the most important thing. Get this down. And I'll read a little just to provide a little background. We can hold it there. And he starts, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? And yet, if there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inward to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will be manifest. If you want to attain suchness, which is a sense of full realization, you should practice suchness without delay. For Zazen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Cast aside all involvements and cease all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not administer pros or cons. Cease all the movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of all thought and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. And how that has come to sort of live in our lineage and a lot of, I mean, it's a very common way of giving beginning instruction for Zazen, right? So we will give you similar instructions, how to sit, how to sort of settle. And we'll often say, you know, you'll be there, we'll be counting the breath, or you're following the breath, whatever your practice is, and a thought will arise. Thought will arise, and we'll say, you know, see it, acknowledge it, let it go, return to sitting, right? Return to your practice. And that's, I want to slow that up a little and see how that lives in our world and give a slightly different way of maybe thinking about it. So we, so we say, let it go. And when you follow that phrase, it's let it, you're with the thought, go. And so it's the thought that's moving, the thought that is leaving. You're releasing it. And I want to just tweak that phrase and go, let it go. Let it go. The slight difference is you release. You're holding on, you release. You're not liberating the thought. The thought doesn't need to be liberated. You're liberating yourself from the thought. You can think of if you're hanging from a branch and someone says, let it go, you let go, right? Versus let go of it is a little more ambiguous. Another way I like thinking about it is if you're floating down a river, and we think of that river as a river of time, let's say, it's the river of your life. And a thought is a stone inside that river, you know, just sort of comes up, and you're floating down, and you grab hold of it, and you're just sort of anchored there. And maybe as you were floating down, you were having a conversation with other people that were floating down. You're all in the same reality. You're all living in the same stream. But now you've grabbed hold of this rock. They kept going. And at a certain point, you let it go. You let that rock go, and you float away from it. You are back in the stream of life. And you've all experienced this. You're talking to someone, you're both in the same flow, and at a certain point it's like, where are you? Right? And it could be you, right? You're listening to a friend and you grabbed a rock back there, and it's like, I'm hold on a moment, let me just swim down. I'm coming. Right? And so when you let it go, it's about dropping into your life. It's about liberating yourself from this thing that has interrupted you from being right here, right now, right? That's the practice. And we bring it into the Zendo, we bring it into Zazen because it's simple, clean, and clear. And so you can practice this skill and just see how your mind keeps going away. And you have to... It's the mind that's grabbing on, so it's the mind that needs to release. And you know, the thought will seem to vanish, but you can think of it as it's the thought. Thought is not going anywhere. It doesn't have, like, legs. It's not like releasing something from a, you know, have a heart trap, you know, where it sort of goes running off, right? But it seems to disappear because if you go back to that river, right, it's going further away. You're back in the flow of your life. The thought is inert. The thought ultimately is nothing. But the thought is not going anywhere. It doesn't have a life. It's not like releasing a bird from a cage, is another way of thinking. Except if you think of yourself as the cage, you're the cage, and you're releasing the bird from within yourself. And letting things go is also close to and intimate with letting things be. By letting them go, you let them be. And also, letting something go is making space for letting something in. Not necessarily in to, again, distract you, but it's like as long as you're holding on to something, nothing else can come in. If you're full of anger or you're preoccupied about work, the blue sky can't come in, birdsong can't come in, your friend can't come in, you're filled up. There's no empty spaces, no tables, you know. Make a reservation. It's a busy night. Yeah, so you let it go. You let yourself go. And that opens you. It empties you. It allows you to be receptive, which means you can bring the world in. Which is how that first story is relevant. Because this training, I've been doing this for a while, and I do believe it was that training that allowed me, instead of just being preoccupied with what I wanted, to fully hear this person in front of me, who's like, you're on some other script. You want to call social services and figure out where you're going to house me. I don't think that's the words going on, but that's, you can imagine, that's where I'm at. But I knew enough that he pulled me up, and I took that as, let it go. Be here, be open to this person in front of me who's alive in my hands. Engage with them, be with them. Letting go is also the flip side of not holding on to. So one of the things you can also work with is just thinking about, so you can wait until you've grabbed hold of stuff and work on letting it go. You can also try to just work on why you grab it in the first place. Because you don't grab hold of things, then you're not going to have to. I mean, if you start at that stage and figure out, because if you're grabbing hold of something, let me put it this way. I think when you let things go, it can feel scary. Because ultimately, when you let something go, you're released back into your life. And for a moment, and as you work with it, that moment gets larger, you've let go of thought. Your mind's empty. And so I think we grab hold of things often because that is scary. We grab things because they're reassuring, because the things we grab create a self that we're familiar with and comfortable with. Oh, I'll grab onto that because that gets me right back into that situation at work, and I know what that's about. And you can feel your edges there, right? It's sort of like, if sitting can be this thing where you're just sort of opening up into nothingness, this sharpens things. You know exactly where the boundaries of yourself is. The other thing that's happening is that when you're holding something, it is, I've thought about this, and I'll wager a little bit that it almost always is about something in the past or the future. It's never about whatever is right now, because you're living in right now, and this is pulling you off of right now, and you have to let go of that to get back to right now. So that thing is really about really what is happening to you, and the thing that is really happening to you is that you're physically in this room, on this seat, breathing. You're back in your body. Your life, if you want to locate your life, locate your body. Because wherever your body goes, I guarantee you, your life is going with it. And it's your mind that leaves the body. It just sort of checks out, right? And goes off to the, you know, the matinee double feature. And you have to at some point ask why are you habitually holding on? So that's just something to work with. Because the more you can work with not grasping, the easier it can be work with letting go. Because once you hold on, it's like having this thing and someone saying, let go. And you're like, yeah, I'm not going to let go of this. You know, you're playing tug of war with this thing. You know, so it's, if you can just avoid grabbing hold of it, you'll live a life that's less contentious. And just realizing that, at least in this tradition, one of the things that we hold up, right, is that reality isn't a thought. It's not what we think. It's not what we can think. It's what is immediately experienced. It's what's coming through all of our senses into our body. That is the immediate experience of being alive. And the more you can stay with that, things will arise in the mind. The mind, you know, we often will talk about, if you think of it as just an organ, it secretes thought, right? It just will happen. But it's just going to do what it does. But you have to stay with what is the most immediately present thing, which is your experience of being embodied in the here and now. Ask yourself what you want to let go of, and then use it to examine what you're holding on to. What would you like to get rid of? What would you like to let go of? What are you holding on to? It's a way to bring that practice into your life, right? Because you'll find that our lives are shaped a lot by things that we hold on to. When there's a common story in our tradition of two monks, and they are, one's more senior and the junior monk, and they're walking along a path, and they're walking along a river that sort of has quite active. The stream's really flowing. And there's a woman there, and she's a bit anxious. She's not quite sure how she needs to cross and not exactly sure of her footing. And the older monk decides just to be helpful and grabs her and gets her across the river and sets her on the shore. And the two monks just keep walking. And they're walking for a good long time, and the younger monk is just like stewing in the back. You know, he's just playing over the scene again and again, and at a certain point, you know, he just can't hold it in anymore. And, you know, and at a certain point, the older monk's, you know, sort of getting a sense like, okay, what's going on with you? And says, what's up? And he said, well, how could you, like, carry her across? I mean, we have rules. Like, you can't touch, you have to put yourself back into this culture at that time, you know, medieval Chinese culture, within a monastic order, so that you couldn't touch a woman. So what did you do? And the older monk said, I let her go a long time ago. You're the one still carrying her. Okay. And the one little extra movement in is that there's another letting go buried in that story, which is a letting go of the rules. The older monk sees a need and lets go of the rules. Right? What's more important? The person in front of you, that person at the park bench, you know? Find that distress in the world and engage it. That's the most immediate thing. And, you know, if you get caught up in those rules, like, can I do this? You know, but there's someone bleeding and they're screaming or whatever it is. You don't have time for that. You respond. And so that's just another area in that story where something is let go of. Let go of what you understand, what you know, and therefore what you own. There is no space there for discovery. Once you know the truth, all you have left is how it is applied. Go right to the edge of what you know, and let it go. Let go of what you understand. Face the unknown. Facing the unknown is facing the blank page. Mystery comes from mute, that which lies beyond words. That is speaking, you know, when Dogen is saying, let go of studying words. Let me go right back to it. I think. Or maybe not. Nope. Anyway, just that it's It's not in the study of words. It's not in, you know, Shugen Roshi's very loves saying, you know, there's a reason that we're in the Zendo and not in the classroom. Right? Spiritual work is different than just scholastic work. Getting caught up in what you know prevents you from being open to what you don't know is always far larger than what you know. But if you get caught up with not wanting to be in those situations where you don't know what to do, I don't know how to act, I don't know what's going on, I don't know, if you refuse to engage, I don't know, you're holding on to something. There's a reason why you don't want to let go of what you know. And that also means what you believe, what you think, the ideas you've developed of other people, the biases and prejudices and assumptions that we make. Those are all things that as we walk through the world, we trust and believe that we know that those are true. We don't see that they aren't anything other than a true reflection of the world. What can we actually hold? What can we actually take hold of? Nothing abides. It all changes. The things we fear giving up are things we never actually had in the first place and will pass away regardless of what you do. What we are trying to let go of are the things we hold on to, where there is nothing we can hold on to. Everything is empty. We give it weight and substance. Right? That's a classic Buddhist teaching, that all things are empty, which means that all things are changing. All things are in that flow of that river. All things are on the move, not fixed down. Things are written water and not carved in unmoving stone, right? Edges are constantly inferred. We create those edges. We sort of draw outlines around things and say, it goes this far and that's all. I know where that is. What does it mean to see things as they are? It means to put aside our own assumptions about the world, right? So when we see a thought, that's an assumption about a colleague, a situation, something in the world. And we need to, I was going to work with what I just read. Anyway, that you have to let go of those assumptions to be able to see it anew, to see it fresh, to be able to come back to here and now. We just mentioned a couple other things. Where? Koben Shino Otogawa, someone also I've been working with. I just want to bring him in as well. He came over with Katagiri to work with Suzuki Roshi in San Francisco. He's if that first, Suzuki Roshi is part of the first wave, but that second group coming over to help build and found Tassajara in San Francisco. He also founded the Santa Cruz Zen Center and other places. He was renowned for his skills in Kyudo, which I didn't know. But he was revered for that. He was able to split a blade of grass at 25 meters, it was said. And he was invited to give a demonstration in Big Sur, which is around from Santa Cruz, and that's where Esalen was. And so he went up there, and they set up a target for him right there by the edge of the, Big Sur's gorgeous. It's this sort of mountainous cliffs right on the Pacific Ocean. So they set up the target just a little in front of that. And so he got prepared, and he pulled back. Hojin was talking. Somehow you knew I was going to hit Kyoto. He put his bow, arrow in, and he pulled back. And everyone's just like, they're just holding their breath. And he just let it go, and whack! You hear that string go slap. And the arrow just went flying right over the target and into the Pacific. And he did it, not a moment of being fazed. And he said, bullseye! And what's beautiful about that story is, it's not revealed in the story, and I love it's not revealed. You don't know if he missed or if he intended. But either way, what he's telling you, you're trying to evaluate me on whether I hit the target. You're caught up in the target. You're caught up in the goal. You're caught up in the end rather than in that moment. I often tell people, because it seems absolutely counterintuitive. I'm a painter by my career and training, and I like to tell people, you don't paint in order to make paintings, which sounds like, what? You make paintings in order to paint. You fall in love with what's the activity, not the product. When you're first going out, it's like, oh my God, I love this. It's a very, like, love at first sight. You in paint, you in clay, you in stone, you in whatever it is. You fall in love. Everything else gets overlaid onto it. Annie Diller tells a similar story in The Writing Life, a writer sort of corners a writing teacher who he had been in the class with, and he said, do you think I can be a writer? And teacher was sort of taken up sharply and sort of said, I don't know. Do you like sentences? Right? And you can imagine the writer going, sentences? You know, I got into this. I have great stories to tell. Oh boy, the stories I can tell once you, if you give me permission, I got stories to tell and narrative, sleight of hands, and it's going to be awesome. But what that writer teacher is pointing to is you don't become a writer in order to tell stories. There's lots of ways to tell stories. You could become a filmmaker. You can do animation. You could go into theater. All sorts of ways. So you don't become a writer to tell stories, you become a writer because you love to write sentences. You love one word following another. And the beautiful thing, and Andy Diller just explores this so well, is that when you're writing into the blank page. You're writing into an openness, right? You're discovering the story as it unfolds, and you're falling in love with the process of telling that story, not because it's a foregone conclusion, you're just filling in the blanks, or just needing to get, you know, it's already baked, and you just have to, okay, write this out so you can send it. It's unfolding, it's alive for you. In the way that for a kudo, an archer, right, that being in your body, being in that moment, is alive. The target, once you let go, you let go. The target doesn't matter at that point. You could let go and just walk away. Whether it hits the target or not, who cares? The audience might, but were you fully embodied? Was it where you're fully in the moment, where your mind isn't distracted by the target, by the audience. Being in the moment. Let me end with one other thing, because I'm going to read a poem, but I'm going to skip the poem, just I'll end on a different note. We live in a contentious time, if anyone hasn't noticed. And it can be a challenge to understand, well, what does all this letting go? That all sounds well and good, letting go. But I walk out these doors, and one, there's a lot of people that want to take from me, take my rights, take my freedoms, take my liberties. And you're asking me to take these things which are in pain, which are in danger, and to let go. And two very quick ways to practice that. In the spring, there was I don't know if it's cherry blossom or plum blossom that we have at the monastery, but there was this tree in bloom. We'll say plum blossom. Just an array of pink. And I remember standing in front of it. And I don't know how the thought came in, but I said, oh, a tree blossoms in Gaza. Tree blossoms in Gaza. Because the world, there's no division. This tree is blossoming on this land. And this land is continuous all the way under that land in those territories, right? It's all at peace. This tree blooming here is blooming as a part of Gaza. It's blooming inside a farmer's dreams in Ramallah, thinking of an orchard that he used to grow. And it's blooming in front of me. And there are children dying in the Zendo. It goes both ways. Once you can let go that everything is in its place, it's not all of a piece. It's not all one thing. Gaza's over there. This blooming tree is over here. They don't belong with each other. But the heartbreak happens when they both enter you, more than when you just let one or the other enter, because the heartbreak is how this world can contain those two things. You know? And when you think of children dying, and you think of ground being consecrated and made holy from that horror, is to understand the whole earth is consecrated, the whole earth is holy. The land under your feet has been made holy and as witness to all that has happened on top of it. And you are in the presence of that. And you're only in the presence of it if you can let everything else go and let it enter. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.